Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic, Corona Boy. Joining us on today's podcast is Doug Clifford, a photojournalist at the Times, who was working hard in February and March before he developed symptoms that left him bedridden. He ended up testing positive for COVID-19, and his 8-year-old gave him a new nickname, hence the title of this episode. Doug wrote about his experiences, and we'll link to that story when the podcast airs. But we wanted to have him share his story here because it's a reminder of how journalists, especially photographers, are putting themselves at risk to cover the story of the coronavirus. So Doug, in February, everything was fine. You were out and about. Tell the story of what happened from there.
So I hadn't even thought of coronavirus. I hadn't even, it hadn't crossed my mind even once until the end of January. A friend of mine was traveling in China, and I saw that this World Health Organization had issued a bulletin that there was an outbreak. And he and I were in touch through email, and I joked with him that, you know, maybe he needs to run for the hills because there's a virus chasing him. And I didn't really give it any thought after that, but he sent me an email about 4 days later and said he was having a really hard time getting out of China, and that kind of piqued my interest. And I started keeping track of it. But as, you know, my friend left China, I went about my daily routine, and I was just covering general assignments for the Times. And we were, we have a photo team of 9 that developed the visuals, including video and stills. And I was just covering general assignments, everyday things, everything from commission meetings and city council meetings, food reviews, feature pictures, weather pictures, I mean, all that kind of thing. And then once the virus started spreading through Europe and getting into the United States, things changed dramatically. And most of March for me and the staff was coronavirus duty.
At that point, were you anxious?
I would say the world didn't really have a lot of information, a lot of data to make informed decisions. There's been a lot of blurred lines on how it was going to present, and nobody was really certain who it was affecting and how it was affecting people. And personally, I'm a very evidence-based journalist. I like to see data, and I like to see evidence. And I just wasn't seeing enough evidence, so I wasn't very concerned.
So were you're out in the field in March, are you wearing masks and stuff? Did you guys, I'm trying to remember where we were. I know we were trying to keep our distance a little bit, right?
Yeah, so my memory is that masks were already starting to disappear. I did make a run mid to late March to see if there were any out there because I was documenting supplies starting to become scant, including hand sanitizer, toilet paper, even paper towels, wipes, anything that had a bleach product in it or a sanitizing product in it, the shelves were starting to clear. And so I was curious about the masks, and I did check, and there were hardly any masks around town. They were starting to disappear. So I was working without masks, but I was trying to keep my distance because early evidence that I was seeing was that this was airborne and that it was respiratory and that it could be distributed as an aerosol. So that meant my proximity to people, and especially in closed spaces, would put me at risk of inhaling the viral component and becoming sick. So that was my strategy, was to keep my distance.
So you're like at the airport on the days that the governor's trying to decide to like ban people from flying into Florida. Is there a piece of you thinking like, holy cow, I don't want to be here, or like, I'm really in the thick of things now. If it's going to get bad anywhere, it's at the damn airport. Like, what's going through your head while you're doing your job?
Well, so it's March 23rd and Ron DeSantis has issued this executive order. He said it started at midnight and he was going to order that anyone that was coming into Florida from New York, New Jersey, they would have to quarantine for 14 days. They would have to wear masks, you know, that kind of thing. And so when I found out about that, my news instinct kicked in right away. I thought, man, this is big news for Florida. And my first instinct was, I need to get over to TIA. So honestly, I didn't really think, oh boy, I could be putting myself at risk here. I thought, man, this is a monumental moment for Florida. This is where we're really acknowledging that we have a significant risk at hand and we really need to be vigilant. And it was a real clear signpost that the governor was going to take this seriously. So I went straight to the airport. I was there at 11:30, right before the first flight came in.
Now, Lane has worked with Doug a lot longer than I have, but I mean, just to give people an idea, I mean, Doug is the guy that is always the first name that comes up when there's a hurricane. He's the one, everybody's like, okay, well, Doug will obviously go. He's like Mikey, he'll do it. He'll be in the middle of everything. Am I right, Lane? I mean, that's
Doug's the guy you want to be with if you're in something dangerous, because he's really like level-headed. He doesn't freak out. He knows methodically what to do to take care of things, how to like work the cops, work the first responders, get over the barriers and be where the action is. And I always feel safer and better when I'm with Doug, not just that he's going to make great pictures or video from my story, but he's going to take care of the situation. He's like the fixer guy. So yeah, well, I would say definitely the first guy I sent into danger.
So what, in March, you started, toward the end of March, Doug, you started feeling woozy. You felt hot. Go ahead. It's like it felt like a little like a regular flu, but you know, but you obviously had a sense that
So on March 23rd, I'm at the airport and I document those flights coming in, and I do recall interacting with at least a half dozen people that had come in from New York and New Jersey, you know, taking their names, getting quotes, asking them what it was like up there. And then the next week, I was covering the safer at home situation, because the cities were starting to enforce, the county and the cities were starting to enforce the safer at home orders that were coming in. And I went to a Pinellas County Commission meeting where they were deliberating that. I covered a parade for parents, students, and teachers to acknowledge that children weren't seeing their teachers. This was up in Pasco County. And then I was documenting street scenes. So I was all over the place. I was in Safety Harbor. I was in Tarpon Springs. I was in Dunedin. And I was out in the street. I was interacting with people, but keeping distance, but certainly.
We're with Spring Breakers?
Yeah, Spring Breakers. I went to Clearwater Beach. And I remember when I returned to the car, I thought, I was playing a little game with myself. I was wondering if it was my head, you know, if it was my mind that was playing tricks on me, and that I was talking myself into how disgusting it felt, or I was trying to figure out if it was really that disgusting out there. I mean, it was kind of a fun game. It was a game, because I was convinced that it was all around us now. And I was convinced that, you know, there were quite a few people that weren't taking it seriously. So fast forward to the last week of March, I decided to go out to US 19 at daybreak, because I was astounded, and had been for the week prior, at how much traffic was out. Traffic to me was kind of a litmus to indicate how many people were out and about. And in the mornings and even in the evenings, kind of in the rush hour times, I was seeing thousands of cars on US 19, which tells me the services were out, people were still out shopping, people were in the stores. So I thought, the news value here is I'm gonna document this with the camera and publish a picture to show all of these people. And certainly, as I suspected, at US 19 and Alderman Road in Palm Harbor on March 30th, the morning of March 30th, there were hundreds of cars streaming back and forth at the 6 and 7 a.m. time frame. But while I was making that picture, I had kind of a cold sweat. I had a little pit in my stomach. I was a little wobbly, you know, a little scratchy, uncomfortable, chills. And I thought, yeah, this is not good. This is not a good situation. And I rushed home and put the thermometer into my ear, and certainly I had popped a fever.
And you pretty much knew then coronavirus. Like, that wasn't a doubt in your mind. Like, yeah, I got this thing now. Like,
you know, back to the points about what we knew and what we didn't know about the virus. I did know enough and have been keeping my finger on the pulse of symptoms enough to make a general assumption. And based on my exposure, I thought, yeah, this could be it. And something I was experiencing in the days prior to popping the fever is the bottoms of my feet, both of my feet, felt like somebody had beaten them with a board. And that's not an exaggeration. I would get out of bed and I thought, my God, I'm not 90 years old. What's going on? You know, I was hobbling out of bed in the morning for those days prior. And I thought, man, I hadn't moved any furniture. I hadn't kicked anything. I hadn't been in a marathon. And I thought, that's just really not good. It's odd. But, you know, I'm in my 40s. You know, I thought maybe it was my age. But then as data started coming in and after I was diagnosed, it was pretty clear that that was likely the result of the virus load in my body and manifesting itself in my extremities, which there's a lot of data now that supports that.
So how was it? I mean, I feel like we were terrified for you, Doug. And but then I worked with Doug on the piece that he wrote, and you're so calm. Were you really that calm?
I wouldn't say I'm a fatalist, but I certainly have learned. I have some tools in my toolbox to deal with adversity. Of one of those things is that, you know, I really believe in that you have to take life on life's terms. You know, life happens every day. There's, you know, illness and there's fortune and there's fantastic things that happen and there's bad things that happen. And I really believe that, you know, when bad things happen, you have to slow things down and try to be as rational as you can be. And for me, it was, you know, maybe I was functioning on a day-to-day or even a week-by-week in my mind rhythm of time of a week-to-week or a day-to-day, and I had to slow things down to hour-by-hour and minute-by-minute. And I find that, for me, that's a really good coping tool. So I slowed things way down. I made contact with my physician, and I kind of isolated myself from the children, and I made plans to get up for to Pasco County to a testing site. I contacted the photo department and talked with my supervisors, and we did a little bit of contact tracing to figure out who I've been in contact with. You know, that's just, for me, that's how I cope with things. You know, I was able to kind of slow things down and kind of look at it like going through the Panama Canal, you know, lock by lock by lock. It's just a really good tool. I mean, I handle everything like that. I had a major car repair recently, and it was several thousand dollars. And at face value, you know, people would be flipping out and losing their mind just to slow it down. You know, it's just kind of a tool. That's what I did.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Were you worried about your kids? Your kids, three little kids, right? How did you take care of them and isolate from them? And what were your worries from them? And what kind of heck did they give you when you're down and vulnerable?
You know, that's part of the psychological game. When you're in close quarters with people that you care about and you don't have a lot of knowledge, or there's not a lot of data, there's not a lot of evidence, you know, you make concessions on what you think is manageable and what you can do. And then in other places, there's kind of a slippery slope, you know, meals and interactions with school and trying to manage problems like a scraped knee, or, you know, questions about a book report, or, you know, needing help getting something out of the freezer. You know, you're just taking it one moment at a time. And I was really trying to manage just being aware that the evidence was that proximity was, keeping my proximity from the children was an important factor. And I worked on that every moment that I could to try to diminish their exposure to me. But certainly it wasn't perfect.
Must have worked. They didn't get sick, right?
Yeah, and you know, I have suspicions that the virus has been here for a while, and it's possible that they have had it. My son was really ill in January, and it's something that's in the back of my mind. I'm just suspecting it's possible.
People might wonder, Doug, if it ever crossed your mind not to go back out in the field. I mean, did you ever have that thought of like, okay, I'm healthy again and this thing is still out there?
No, and I had a lot of support from my physician, and she's a very intelligent and well-read physician who is constantly reading reports and keeping up on data. And that's very reassuring. Through the process of being sick, I was sick for most of 10 days. She and I were keeping in touch using a video chat and also texting. And she was right there with me. If I had a crazy off the wall question or even something that I was mildly concerned about, she would take her time to answer questions. And, you know, one of those reemerging questions was, you know, whether the virus would give me immunity, and whether or not, you know, at the end of this, you know, I would be able to work, and that I would be well enough to go and do what I love to do. And she felt pretty certain, and I don't like speaking for my physician, but my vibe was that this virus is going to work similar to other viruses, and that my body would develop an immunity response, and then antibodies would be present, and I would be repelling that viral load. If I came in contact with it again, I would be repelling it. And that whole idea has been bolstered since my recovery, because I was approached by One Blood, which is a local nonprofit blood bank that was pursuing my convalescent plasma for plasma therapy. And they took 2 pints of convalescent plasma from me on my birthday, which was April 28. And it was quickly distributed to a patient in the BayCare system. And because of HIPAA laws, I've been unable to get information on whether or not it helped the patient. But the way I look at something like that is there's enough evidence and there's enough physicians and that believe in that. It's worth the gamble. It's worth putting myself out there. It's worth donating my plasma.
Yeah, I mean, if any good can come out of it, that's a wonderful thing to be able to offer people. You know, do you approach your job differently now when you're out in the field, or when you're preparing to do your job? Do you think about your own safety or your own PPE differently?
You know, right now, I believe I have an immunity. There's just not a lot of evidence right now that this virus is mutating rapidly. every virus is different. And when there's rapid mutation, usually the data that presents that evidence comes pretty quick and early, because they start to sequence the DNA in different labs, and lab A sends over a report to lab B, and they say, wow, this thing is radically different. This genome is radically different than this one. Look how much it's mutated. There hasn't been a lot of those reports coming out. So I feel like for now, I have an immunity, and actually it empowers me. I feel like I'll be able to do my job safe, relatively well and safe right now.
Why you look so fierce in your comeback photo?
Do I?
What do you think? You know, people, if they're sick, what from after your experience, what would you recommend?
You know, this virus presents in ways that they're still deciphering. You know, they're just now coming up with data and suggesting that children are having inflammatory disease in their circulatory systems and in the pericardia and the heart. This is all just coming to light. And so we're in an infant stage for the discovery of symptoms, and I don't think there's a real clear canon or a list that we could go to that would say that one symptom is more chronic than another, except for the respiratory parts of this. Obviously, mm-hmm. people that have a respiratory component that is starting to present like a shortness of breath or a discomfort in breathing, I think we need to be worried about that. And I know that on day 7 and into day 8 for me, I did have a moment where I started to wonder if my cough was too serious, whether or not I might end up in the hospital. You know, these are games that you play with yourself. And so the answer to your question, if I were giving advice to people, I would say it's probably best to quarantine at home and really pay attention to your respiration, because I think if anything's going to get you with this disease, it's going to be acute respiratory illness.
Well, we're glad you're all right. I'm glad you're all better. Back out.
Absolutely.
It was scary. It was scary to know that somebody had caught it. And especially since everybody's out trying, and you've got to cover this story. We obviously have to keep covering the story. So.
You know, I'm really amazed that of the dozens of people that have reached out to me in the through the process of writing the first person and getting feedback from the community and also my colleagues, the feedback that I'm getting is you're the first person I've met that has it. And dozens, I would say maybe over 100 people now I've had that kind of feedback, including my family and friends. And I'm the youngest of 13 children, and my siblings have reached out, and they've even told me, you're the only person I know. And they're all over the country. So I'm kind of stunned at that remark, because I was pretty convinced that, you know, probably a neighbor had it, and every third person I see around has it, and maybe my children have had it, you know, that I'm getting this feedback. So I don't know what that's suggesting, but it's interesting to me.
We're glad you're better. We're glad you're back. And thank you for sharing your story with us. Because I do think, you know, we hear about the old people getting it. We hear about, you know, families spreading it around. But someone not doing their job, especially in this industry, you can't avoid being out there. And I just applaud you for sharing this with everybody.
You know, we're all exposed. And, you know, we're all going out to Publix, and we're all going out to Walmart, and we're all going out to Target. We're touching handles and pushing carts and picking up plastic bags, and we're handling food product containers, and we're interacting with our family and loved ones and our colleagues. And, you know, we're all taking these risks, and the evidence is still out. So, you know, what's the difference between me taking those risks every day to put food on the table for my kids and going out and doing some reporting. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. I need to keep my skates moving, and I need to keep working to bring information that's relevant to these stories to the community.
Got to get him a Superman t-shirt or something, you know? Like. Thank you, Doug. If you have a question for Doug or for Lane, or want to suggest a podcast topic, please email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's WRITELANE @tampabay.com. Or find us on our Facebook group. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Allison Graves. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.